Hi there, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand. And today I have for the first time on the show a new guest, and that is Lee Brainard. And Lee, whereabouts are you anyway? Welcome to the show.
Well, I'm located in Oklahoma. For those not familiar with the United States, we are just north of Texas. And Tony, thank you for having me on your program.
That's all good. It's nice to talk to you and have someone different on the show. And I know that you kind of know a lot of the same people I do. And so it would be good to have someone else from that same circle, but with a slightly different perspective. So, yeah. So as far as things go for today, where are we going to start? Obviously, there are a lot of potential topics, a lot going on. I guess the build-up for a potential war with Iran is probably maybe one of the biggest things that's happening at the moment, because we don't really know where that's going to go, but it could be a huge thing, or it could fizzle out like it has other times. So it just seems that there's a big build-up for something, though, with battleships, aircraft carriers and things all being sent to the Middle East. So perhaps we could start, have a little bit of a look at your thoughts on what's happening there.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, Iran is where my mind was going for our starting point myself. So rather than look at it from the size of the military buildup, I'd really like to look at it from a little bit bigger footprint. When I look at what America is flexing her muscles with in Iran right now, I connect it with Venezuela. I connect it with the different plans for a broader North American state that includes like Canada, Mexico, Central America, Greenland. I include President Trump's plans to somehow, some way control, if not annex, Greenland. So in this bigger picture, we see an America that is flexing her muscles and wanting to be the dominant player. And this raises a big question, because you and I have probably both had dozens of conversations in the last few years about where is America in Bible prophecy?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the biggest positions that's held in America is that America is either a non-entity or a second-rate player that doesn't really figure into Bible prophecy. There's a few like myself, and I'm sure you know a few, who think, no, I think America is going to be in Bible prophecy.
Yeah.
So when you look at this big juggernaut of America, who's got a military dominance that can't be matched, who has an economic dominance that's not really matched by anyone, although China is making great inroads, and BRICS could make great inroads, and Europe could make great inroads, but she's never really delivered a quarter of what she promised in the last 30 years of a united Europe. So what are we going to do with this juggernaut that we see developing with America that's exerting herself on the world stage? Well, either she's going to continue this path of dominance and be a significant part of the Roman Empire, or she's going to get clobbered somehow, some way, economic implosion, World War III, something where she's a non-player. We don't really have any other options. You can't have this juggernaut of America in the Bible prophecy of the last days if some other nation is the superpower. Because now you got two big fish in the puddle or in the pond. So either America is that big fish or we're not in the puddle at all.
Yes, well, that's true. That's definitely a very interesting observation. And yeah, I've heard so many different versions of that myself, from you get mystery Babylon as America to, like you say, America just fizzles out. I think it has to be more than fizzling out. I mean, the power of America is like, well, I guess in the Bible, I think it's Jeremiah, 50 or 51, and Babylon's called the hammer of the whole earth. And America seems right now to be in that kind of a role. Not saying necessarily that's what the Bible's talking about, but right at this point in time, you know, that's, yeah, seems to be the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. The sometimes when people push the America is Babylon position, they will go to Jeremiah and they'll quote passages like the hammer of the whole earth, and they'll say that has to be America. But I think you're right. I think that this is just a picture that whoever is the fourth beast in the last days, who's ever the head of the Roman Empire in the last days, they're going to manifest the same kind of hammer spirit that's been manifested starting with Babylon, then that hammer passed to Persia, then it passed to Greece, and now it's passed to Rome. The spirit of Babylon is still at play, and it will come to play again in the fourth beast, which will be some manifestation or other of a renewed Roman Empire.
So maybe give us your position a little bit more on how you think. I mean, obviously none of us has the whole picture. We won't until it all happens and until, you know, God reveals the whole plan. But in terms of the way you see things at the moment, and with everything that's going on, with this build-up, like you say, with Iran and so on, how do you think it, in your perspective, is most likely to play out, at least in the next while?
Well, I suspect that we're going to see America continue to manifest dominance. For decades, I've read people and watched people whose books and video programs, teaching programs, insisted that America is going to economically implode or America is going to fizzle out. And it's never happened. And I really don't expect it to happen. I expect that we're going to see the deep state in America and other parts of the world engineer some kind of an economic calamity that we feel, but it isn't really a threat to the integrity of the deep state and the globalist perspective any more than any other economic calamity that was engineered in the past. And so I suspect that we're going to see America continue her dominance. She's going to absorb maybe whether it's the Club of Rome version or some other version, she's going to kind of absorb and dominate North America, Central America. I think we're going to see America continue to develop economically, militarily. I think we're going to see her go back to industrial domination so that we're not importing everything. We're manufacturing things here. I think we're going to see America roll out military technology that's going to prove to be decades ahead of the rest of the world, and it's going to intimidate and terrify the rest of the world. In fact, I think that's really what we're looking at here with the upcoming war in Iran, if it does come to pass. I think Iran is going to face the same kind of weaponry that was used in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see things unveiled in Iran that were not unveiled. I think it's going to shock and terrify the whole world. So I see America going forth. I'm not going to be a bit surprised if America proves to be the little horn that dominates the Roman Empire, that is the central hub around which all the 10 regions of the world consolidate. Now, what's interesting about this is, if we stop and think about it, the last three superpowers of the western half of the fractured Roman Empire were Spain, France, and England. America has fought all of them in wars, defeated all of them in wars, and America, for all practical purposes, is colonies from the fractured Roman Empire come together. I think you can make a legitimate argument that America, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand are really manifestations of an expanded Roman Empire.
Yeah, well, that is an interesting perspective. And just going back to the economic thing, you know, like people talking about economic collapse and so forth, well, I look back at ones in the past, and it's really all it is a transfer of wealth. So that the people that are the small people, if they want to decimate the middle class and get everyone into a digital system and so on, and so you have to be in the system to be able to participate in commerce and all that. That never stops the people that are the real controllers and the puppet masters, that they don't go broke. Everyone else might, but the people with the real power, they just get more of it. And so if there is some sort of a big economic event, and I think there well could be, and it could tie in with another pandemic and so on, it's not going to take the power away from those people that are the puppet masters behind the scenes. They will have probably just consolidate more, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Another thing I think people don't understand is they look at this massive debt that America has, where in the past few years we've gone from $12 trillion to pushing $30 trillion.
Yeah.
And this seems like an insanely enormous amount of wealth. It seems like a debt load that should sink any nation on earth. Mm. But there's a couple problems I think that people, not a couple problems really, a couple observations that people need to understand about this. First of all, America's gross domestic product and her gross domestic product potential are actually big enough that we could actually bear a debt load, a real debt load, 50% bigger than what we have right now. The other thing that people need to understand is that this debt that we have, in many ways, it's not real debt. It's a how would you call it? It's a fake debt. It's a paper debt. Yeah. It really, this debt is not to another nation so much. It's not to an organized entity so much. It is to the deep state, and it comes through the Treasury Department. It comes through
the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, that's the term. Thank you. The Federal Reserve. It comes through several other means. The World Bank.
Yeah.
These are all the banks, so to speak, or the facilities of the deep state, the globalists.
Yeah.
When a nation goes indebted to these people, that debt is actually never demanded to be paid back. It's never expected to be paid back. Nobody lives under that delusion except the man in the street that doesn't understand how the game is played. These people, they trade the money for subservience. If you will submit to them, then they're going to give you this money. And it's part of the fractional banking system. So you give them $1 million and they give you $10 million that you can use. Now that's $9 million that just appeared out of nowhere. On top of that, with the Federal Reserve, every time they need more money, they just turn the printing presses on and expand the money supply. So we really have an artificial debt system going here. And it's really just a power play for the ultra wealthy to dominate the world. They have no interest in bringing America or Europe down. For the globalists to destroy the economy of Europe or to destroy the economy of America would be, it would hurt them, not help them. So it's at their best interest to have an America which is economically strong, industrially strong, technologically strong, and militarily strong. If they have this, they're way better off to control and dominate that than to burn it or destroy it or get rid of it. And I think that's where this is all going. I think that when it comes to this power play right now, sometimes people look at the power play like there's a group of people in sitting in a smoke-filled room smoking cigars and drinking bourbon or whiskey, and they're coming up with their next plans, and they're determining whether the Democrats will win the next election or the Republicans are going to win the next election. There might be some of that going on, but I think it's a simplistic perspective, because I think the correct perspective is we've actually got 7 or 8 major groups that are vying for domination of the world. You've got the Chinese version of the New World Order, the Russian version of the New World Order, the Muslim version of the New World Order, the Catholic Church version of the New World Order, the American conservatives' version of the New World Order, Europe's version of the New World Order, the Democrats' version of the New World Order, and probably a few others that are contending for domination of the world. You certainly have the technocratic version of world domination. And I suspect what's really going to come to pass is some melding together of America, Europe, and the technocrats, and everybody else, Catholics, the Muslims, Russia, Asia, China, they're all going to fade into the background. These are going to come together and dominate the world. That's what I see coming to pass.
Well, when it comes to the economic thing and the money and the fiat money system, I can see, because they want to transition us into a more digital system, that they could have some sort of a collapse of the using debt and so on for the current financial system in order to have an excuse to have to push everyone into a new system. So it'll be a controlled collapse, not some out of, you know, order thing that catches them blindsided. I think, they're putting systems into place now where they want to control us all through this digital system, and with AI and all of this other stuff. So I'm kind of looking at it as that is a potential angle to how it plays out. And another pandemic or something could be used as the excuse.
Yeah, and you're right. We could see a collapse that's similar to the recent banking collapse, that we had in 2000, 1987, something of this nature. That could indeed come to pass, but it's also... we simply might see this whole digital currency system and digital surveillance system, which are all kind of tightly wound together. Yeah. You can't separate one from the other. It might simply come in without any kind of an economic collapse of any significance. Mm-hmm. It just comes in because on the plea of sealing our borders, fighting crime, fighting the fundamentalist extremists around the world. So there's various scenarios that this could come in. It's going to be interesting to see how this actually comes to pass. It kind of reminds me of an America. We have football pools, maybe, where people bet on who's going to win the Super Bowl, or they have World Series pools, bet who's going to win on the World Series. Kind of reminds me of this. We share our ideas based on the trends that we see and the scriptures that we see. And some of us will prove to be right, and some of us will prove to be wrong, and maybe the truth that is ultimately prevails is a mixture of several views.
Yeah, well, you could be right. So, do you think that this current situation with Iran, for example, is going to develop to full-on war?
Full-on war, like a World War II or like the Persian Gulf War? No, I don't.
Okay.
A definite campaign that could last anywhere from 2 weeks to a month. I wouldn't say it's an absolute certainty, but right now the odds are looking really high. Unless Iran does a 180, persuaded by her allies like Russia and China, to just surrender the point for now, just pretend to go along with it. If we don't see that, war's coming. Because Iran has said, we're not going to deal with the nuclear program the way you want. We're certainly not going to give up our missiles. We're not going to give up our right to self-defense. That's a threat to Israel. They're still making threats to America. So I suspect that unless something drastic happens, a major campaign is coming. And I suspect that campaign will take out the nuclear sites, the missile sites, military technology sites, the IRGC headquarters and leadership, that it'll take out some important religious leaders like the Ayatollah. I'm not sure that it's going to be enough to lead to regime change. The difficulty that we're facing is if we have a regime change that goes to a pro-American government, you're just throwing a big monkey wrench in Russia, Iran, and Turkey coming together for the Gog and Magog juggernaut situation in the near future. I don't foresee this campaign overthrowing that. I see it as just slowing it down. I suspect that whatever happens in Iran, even if it does involve some kind of regime change, is merely going to be similar to what we saw in Syria, where we just go from one bad apple to another one. And what we get in the end run is actually worse than what we had, or in the end result, because what we have right now in Syria is 10 times more dangerous than Assad Bashar ever was. And I think we're going to see a similar thing in Iran, where some supposed moderates will come to power, and it will be ugly in the long run for Israel.
So what, when you mention Israel, what, how much influence do you feel that the Israel lobby type of has? I know there's all sorts of opinions on that. I see it all the time, from the Israel controls everything position to other not so extreme positions. But, you know, obviously the Israel, whatever your position has on that, this is a significant thing for them as well.
Yep.
So how much pressure is coming from there?
Well, I think, of course, there's a close kinship between America and Israel. At times it gets strained. The difficulty we face here is America is really playing the same game with Israel that we've been playing since World War II. We are allies with the Arab nations as well as with Israel. This is a relationship that fits like oil and water. It's not ideal for the Arabs. It's not ideal for Israel, but we use and abuse both sides of the equation for our own ends. We really don't do this for the sake of the Arabs. We really don't do this for the sake of Israel. I'm not talking about the individual believers. Obviously, we really do believe that God is going to restore Israel. But American policy when it comes to Israel, we just love having that footprint in the Middle East. That's why we're there. That's true with the Arabs. That's true with Israel. And so this is more about America than about them. When it comes to the position that some people think that there's like a secret conspiracy where the Jews are dominating the world, I honestly, I don't believe there's much to that theory. There are Jews in the deep state, which is a very curious thing. There are Jews in the secret societies, which is a very curious thing. I think this is just an illustration that the darkness of the world of that's dominating the world is in Israel and in the Jews is just as much as it is in Europe, America, or the Roman Catholic Church or Islam. But as far as the people and nation of Israel goes, they're not, they're going to be under the gun. They're the ones that are going to be persecuted. They're not going to be the ones that are persecuting. And so these deep state powers, these Jews, I think that they're completely sold out to the dark side, and they are not going to be part of the picture of the restored Israel.
So what about Trump and this peace plan and their meeting, I think, on Thursday for Gaza? You know, where does that fit in? I mean, Trump set himself up as, you know, like the narcissist, I think, position.
Yes.
You know, he's got to be the king of everything.
Yeah, well, it's well known that Trump hates the UN.
Yeah.
He would love to defund the UN. He would love to boot the UN out of America. In fact, I think most Americans, middle-of-the-road Americans, could care less about the UN. We think they're worthless and useless.
Yeah.
And we pour millions and millions and billions of dollars into there, and all they do is promote leftist Marxist nonsense. So Trump, I think, is really looking at trying to raise up his own world peacekeeping organization. And when you look at the nations that are part of it and the nations that he's invited, the ones that he's invited that accept that are largely Middle Eastern Muslim nations, the ones that he's divided and are hesitating are European nations. He's basically bringing together a coalition of nations that are former Roman Empire nations. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. I think it's a power play on his part. I think he wants to maintain his clout and power after his 4 years in office in America are over. And I think this is part of his plan. Whether it goes the way he would like it to go or not is going to remain to be seen. But it is definitely a provocative situation.
So my personal position has always been that Trump was chosen to be the president, selected to be the president. I believe that before 2016 election, you know, nearly a year out, we were saying on this channel, Trump's going to be the next president. He was selected to be the president in 2016. I feel the same way about this current term. You know, he was groomed for the job that the elite, the global elite wanted. He was the man for the job. So I still think I don't think he's the guy in charge. I think he's the face of the people in charge.
Yeah.
And so whatever he's doing is within the bounds of what those global puppet masters actually want for whatever direction they're trying to take this world order. And it's very interesting because J.D. Vance on the Megyn Kelly show just recently said that they're building the New World Order, and he didn't just say it once. He used the term New World Order like three or four times in a short space of time. So, you know, that's what they're doing. They're trying to build the New World Order maybe under the image that they want with America, like you say, as the number one superpower within it. And I totally agree that there is a move to try and make the 10 nations and to have a unified America, which is very interesting because one of the plans drawn up originally for that with Canada and Greenland and all that joined into America was actually Elon Musk's grandfather was involved in that. And look at the position that Elon Musk has of power in the world today with everything from his Neuralink to Spacelink and all that.
Oh, yeah. And this is why I think no matter whether America or Europe ends up being the head of the Roman Empire, you're going to see the technocrats led by people like Elon Musk having a very dominant position in this. We can see the pieces coming together. It's a little harder to get our mind wrapped entirely around what it's going to look like once they come together. Now, I'd like to just comment a little bit. My buddy J.B. Hickson also holds this position that the election was a selection, not an election. And I think we really only have two options that can be considered if you understand what the globalism. The one option is that one, that it was a selection, not an election. The only other option is that there's parties who are heading for globalism, who have different views of globalism, and they have different versions that are trying to be brought to the table of globalism, and there's tension amongst them. And it's uncertain which of those parties is going to come out on top. From that perspective on it, there's a tussle between the America First globalists and the Europe First globalists and the UN First globalists. And right now, there's a big tussle between Europe and America. And it's obvious that there's no way under the sun the UN is going to dominate the world.
Yeah, well, that's true. So just makes me think back to 1961 or 62, I think it was, the first Prime Minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, he made some statements about it being all centered around Israel and Jerusalem, and that would be where the world court would be, established. And then I don't want to digress too much, but you look at the Rothschilds building of the Supreme Court building in Israel, and it's all very Freemasonic, and it was paid for by them, and they designed it and all of that. And I'm wondering whether if the UN as we know it starts to falter and becomes more and more toothless, are we going to see some sort of a move towards establishing some sort of a world body that could be in that Middle East and even tied in with this whole Gaza thing? I don't know. I'm just wondering on that as a possibility.
I think it's definitely going in that general direction. I think there's been a number of deep state globalist Jews in the different secret societies who they don't, it's not like Israel is going to dominate the world or the Jews are going to dominate the world, but these small coterie of Jews are a significant part of this world globalism, which includes a lot of people that are not Jews. And this small group definitely wants to dominate the world, and they see their footprint being established in the Middle East, particularly in Israel. They know history. They know that whoever dominates the Middle East is going to dominate the world. This is why Greece tried to dominate the Middle East. This is why the Roman Empire tried to dominate the Middle East. This is why the fractured Roman Empire has been trying to dominate the Middle East. And the domination over the Middle East has gone back and forth between the Western half and the Eastern half, even after the Eastern half became Muslim. And now domination is back in the hands of the West. And I think we're going to see an acceleration of this program where we're going to see the West, particularly the entities and nations and organizations that are associated with globalism, put a massive footprint in the Middle East and a big footprint right in Israel. I think this is what Gaza is all about, footprint in Israel.
Yeah, and let's face it, the Middle East and Israel in particular is the central focus of end times Bible prophecy. I mean, it has to all, you know, culminate in that area to fit the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel and Zechariah and all of that, you know, Zechariah 12 and all nations gathering against them and being Jerusalem being that heavy burdensome stone and all of that type of thing. So it has to kind of gravitate in that direction, I think.
It sure does. And it's both exhilarating and terrifying at the same time to see all this stuff coming to pass. You know, 30 years ago when I was a young man, I would tell my friends, I think America is going to rise and be a significant portion of the Roman Empire. And everyone would just laugh at me. And they just kept giving me books to read about the collapse of America. Well, here we are. America is still going forwards. Yeah. America is still trying to dominate the world. We knew that Israel was going to be the focus of Bible prophecy in the last days. Yeah. We knew that all the nations were going to come to a position of anti-Zionism, anti-Judaism, anti-Semitism. And now we're seeing this in spades and face cards. It's, you know, and we see the American government, European government, Australian governments, Canadian governments racing on this path of accelerating technology, the digital currency, digital banking, the entire digital economic system, a digital life. Everything is digital. And they're throwing in the quantum computing and the AI. Mm. And this whole thing is a massive train wreck waiting to happen for human freedom and for consciousness and, for that matter, for the Bible and Christianity.
Well, you look at robots being included in all of this too and how fast that is developing. And I look at it, Jesus saying, unless the days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. I can really see that.
So another thing going down that path, and you're talking about the robots and the AI. When you look at the technology that America is rolling out, when you look at the technology that China is pretending to have, and I think she's probably a few years short of where she's pretending to be at, with robot soldiers and stuff, you go down this path and 30 years out in the future, wars will be fought with nations are fielding armies of robots, not armies of human beings. And nations are fielding high technology weapons, not low technology weapons. But this doesn't fit Armageddon. Armageddon is not hydraulic fluid flowing bridal deep. Armageddon is blood flowing bridal deep. So when you look at that, that implies that Armageddon is on this side of the 30 years, not on that side of the 30 years, which means it's close. And if Armageddon is close, then the rapture is close.
Some people would say that we can expect some sort of a event like a massive solar EMP or something that knocks out all the technology, and that's why we end up going backwards. But yeah, I don't know. That's kind of hard to see because the Bible talks about horses and different things like that in these end time scenarios in Armageddon and so on. But are we literally going to go back to horses and people riding on horses, or is that just figurative?
Well, you raise a very interesting question, and I've worked on this. I'm actually working on a paper on this. You can, when we talk about arms, for instance, when we say the word arms, we're talking about small arms, rifles, pistols, knives, grenades, grenade launchers, anything of that nature, RPGs. These are all arms. But yet, the word arm literally and historically was your physical arm. And then it came to be used for swords and bows and spears, anything that you hold in your hand. And then it just stayed on that trajectory to the modern usage of small arms, which are much more advanced. Same thing with the use of the word horse. In the Bible, we read of, it'll simply say horse, but the context tells us it means cavalry, and it's implying a rider, even though it just says horses. So it'll say, they brought 12,000 footmen and 12,000 horses. They mean 12,000 cavalry. And horse has been used historically in the Indo-European languages for cavalry. In fact, the English word cavalry is based on the French word for horse. And we talk about air cavalry and armored cavalry, and there's no horses at all there. So when it comes to these passages in Scripture, we could still be literal if this passage was talking about armored cavalry or armored horses rather than literal horses. And if it was talking about modern missiles and modern arms rather than ancient missiles and ancient arms. The other thing I would point out is when we come to the end of the 70th week and we come to Armageddon, even if men are riding horses there, how do all the nations of the world gather at Armageddon without some degree of modern technology? You're going to have enough of modern technology to get those armies over there, to get their weapons over there, to get their food over there, to get the whole entire supply chain over there. So I think the world is going to be greatly battered in the tribulation, but it's going to be standing enough that they still have the technological wherewithal to get all the armies of the world to Armageddon for the Battle of Armageddon.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective. I'm glad you shared that. And as you're saying it, I'm also thinking of the witnesses in the book of Revelation that get killed and the whole world basically sees it and celebrates. So the only way that can happen is if there's technology, because otherwise you can't. So, yeah. Mm. So, all right. So we've covered some of these things. Now, if you were going to tell the listeners now, you know, in these perplexing times, what's going on and things, what would you suggest that people do? Do they do something physically themselves? Is it all spiritual preparation? You know, what would you advise our listeners at this point when looking at this whole picture? What should they do? How should they approach it?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to discourage anyone from storing up a little bit of things like beans and rice and salt and powdered milk or cheese or whatever your favorite foods are, some long-term storage food items and having a way to provide cooking and heating if some of the grid goes down for a short while or a long while. particularly if you lived in a very cold region. But I absolutely believe that the primary preparation we need to have is simply to be right with the Lord. First of all, we need to be born again. If we're not born again, all the preparation in the world is going to be worthless for you. And once you're born again, then to make sure that you're in the Word of God and you're really following hard after the Lord with a life of discipleship and spiritual warfare that's honoring to Him. Keep your heart in the Word, keep your mind in the Word, and study it, learn it. The more that you know of the Word, the more you're going to know the Lord, the more you're going to know His Word, His will, His ways, the more you're going to be able to recognize what's going on in the world. You don't want to find yourself all of a sudden saying, oh my goodness, we're in the last days. And then you've got frantically trying to read through the Gospels and frantically trying to figure out what in the world's going on, frantically reading through Revelation and Daniel. Way better off to put the time into it now where we still have a little bit of breathing room and to really come to grips with what's going to happen in the world in the last days. And, you know, sometimes the last day stuff gets really confusing for people and controversies get thrown at them. And it's like, are we supposed to be pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, no trib? Are we supposed to be pre-mill, post-mill, no-mill? What are we supposed to be? Well, folks, some of these things are a little bit complicated, but let me give you some encouragement. If you can get this part straight, you're on the right side of the fence and you can worry about the details later. The Lord Jesus, there's going to be a literal tribulation. There's no doubt about it. There's going to be a literal Antichrist, a literal one world government. It's going to be ugly. And we also know that Jesus is going to come down from heaven, clean this mess up, carry the trash out, and we're going to have a glorious future. So if that's all you understand right now and all the other controversial questions you don't have an answer for, that's okay. Just keep reading the Bible, keep studying, keep thinking, keep weighing those issues and working through them. But you're on the right side of the fence, and we know who's going to win this war. His name is Jesus.
Absolutely. Actually, I think the one position that's probably the most dangerous is the ones that are full-on preterists and say, oh, no, none of that's going to happen. So those are the ones that I think are the most concerning. Anyway, but that's another subject. So where can people find you? How do they find you online? And is there a physical place where they find you as well?
Yes. So I have a website and a YouTube channel which go by the name Soothkeep. S-O-O-T-H-K-E-E-P. That's Old English for Truth Fortress. You can also find me on social media venues as Soothkeep. So if you type in my name, Lee Brainerd, or if you type in Soothkeep into Google, it will bring you to these venues, and then you can find my videos, my teaching, my writing, and we can connect.
So there's one more thing. Our mutual friend Wendy May would probably shoot me if I don't say anything here online, and that is there is a conference coming up in New Zealand on, I think, April 25th in Auckland, and you're going to be involved in that. And that's correct, isn't it? So, yes, people might want to, and there are other speakers involved in that conference as well. So people, if you're interested to see Lee in person and who else is coming? I think Billy Crone and...
Billy Crone and Brandon Holthouse for sure.
Okay, so there we go. So that's going to be in Auckland, and I'll try and put some details or a picture of the flyer in the video. So if people are interested in that, and if you're in New Zealand, you've got a chance to come to that conference. I think it's April 25th. So thank you for being on the show. It's been a very interesting discussion. And based on this, I'd love to have you back again soon, Lee.
It's been a great blessing, brother. And may the Lord continue to bless all the works of your hands. Time is short, eternity's long, and we got a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. So awesome. So thank you so much for being on the show with me today. Folks, also please make sure you subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com and please like and share this video. And remember, A Minute to Midnight is run 100% by donations, and We really do appreciate the people that donate to us. There's kind of a small group that people that donate regularly. And at this point, it would be really nice if there were a few other people that were able to help us out. That'd be great. So you can donate at aminutetomidnight.com if you want to help us. And the music used in the shows I've written, played and recorded. So God bless, God willing, we'll be back with another episode in a few days' time.